back to the Final Four is not on the schedule. He is Rod, I am Cameron, and Michigan State win at the Breslin 80-64 against Penn State. And Rod, this one was kind of reminiscent of the Minnesota game, except in this one, they kind of put the foot to the pedal there and just kind of blew them out a little bit towards the end. Rather than kind of letting them scrape back in, this one really wasn't in doubt, really, since maybe 10 minutes in the first half. What was your thoughts? I mean, great game. This seems like the best game they've played so far.
It's hard for me to evaluate that necessarily because, there's quality of competition, but, was this better than the UConn game or, the Louisville game or what have you? It was good. It was a really, really good performance. I wouldn't say start to finish, but close, because that start got a little ugly with the turnovers. Mm-hmm. And then they reined it in. But for the majority of that game, I thought Michigan State played very well. And here's something to think about. I think Penn State hit, particularly in the first half, a bunch of really tough shots that they didn't have any business hitting.
Yeah.
Lundy had like two or three. They were really well guarded. He had no business hitting them, and he did. This could have been worse.
Mm-hmm.
Easily could have been worse. So I do think that Michigan State has a lot to be happy about. You're going into a break until the 21st.
Mm.
And that's going to be a tough game at Little Caesars against Oakland, an Oakland team that's been pretty impressive this year. Always a game you have to be careful about because of the motivation that they have. But I'm really happy. I mean, we said this coming out of the Bahamas, that Michigan State, if they did the things that they should do, was set to put themselves in really good position to kick back into Big Ten play with a lot of confidence in terms of what their record would be. And hopefully, we felt like confidence in terms of the way that they're playing. And I think all of that has played out
mm-hmm.
thus far. They are playing a very good brand of basketball, and yet we know they're not near their ceiling. This team can get better.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. There are things they can continue to improve, ways that individuals and on a team basis that they can get better. Speaking for myself as an MSU person, I'm very happy with what I've seen thus far this season, and I feel very good about this team in a variety of ways, which we're going to get into as we talk through this.
Yeah. I think maybe Marcus Bingham leads this one off. 12 points, 13 rebounds, two really great assists from the top, three blocks,
yes.
And he hit a three. I mean, just outstanding game from him.
You can't argue with the way Marcus Bingham is playing, and that's coming off a game that, it wasn't terrible against Minnesota. I just, for a variety of reasons, some of which was foul trouble, some of which was he hurt his knee at a certain point and had to come out of the game. He just didn't have the kind of impact that we've gotten used to him having,
mm-hmm.
And to bounce back and really, really play well. Now, it wasn't perfect. There's the kid for Penn State, Harrer, is a good player. And I mentioned that. I mean, he came into the game shooting, 70% plus from the floor. And he didn't hurt himself much today. He was 6-for-9. So congratulations. They held him to only 67% from the floor. But, Harrer got him a few times. But that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
When you're playing, you're in a league like the Big Ten with as many good post players as there are, and it's going to happen against Coburn and against Dickinson and against Purdue's kids and other guys in this league. It's not like Marcus is going to completely shut the water off for everybody, but I think he made it hard, and the way he rebounded, especially, I thought was really, really impressive. Mm-hmm. That was some Big Ten style rebounding in there. Big bodies, competitive, playing hard. And there were some occasions on defensive rebounds where I thought Marcus actually just out-toughed everybody, which we haven't said about him in his career. Yeah. I think he is continuing to grow as a mm-hmm. player. You mentioned those two passes on identical plays where they have a guy set a pick, ball comes back out to Marcus kind of between the top of the key and the free throw line, and then the screener slips, peels off to the rim. It's a bang-bang kind of play, and he made it twice, once to Malik and once to Joey, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really good stuff. I'm not saying that he's the best big man in the Big Ten. I'm not prepared to say that, but I think we're at a point now. He's done this long enough and against high enough caliber opponents that I think we have to say, when you're talking about the really high-level big men in this league, that discussion needs to include Marcus Bynum.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's as simple as that.
And then Tyson Walker, 10 points, a rebound, 9 assists, 5 for 9 from the floor, 3 steals, only 1 turnover.
Yeah, but he was 0 for 2 from 3. So now he's 9 for 14 on the season. That is the other thing. And when I mentioned a few minutes ago, there's some things that I think are boding well for this team and how they can get even better as they go. This is the first one at the top of my list.
Uh-huh.
I thought Tyson Walker was sensational today. The poise that he's playing with, he is a textbook example of a guy who was able to play fast and yet not look unhurried at all.
Uh-huh.
Totally in control. I just thought it was a fantastic game from him. But all aspects. The way he defended. The way that he ran the offense in the half court and in transition. What started to happen now, we're talking about 2 straight games where he is at, he's in double digits. Both of these Big Ten games, Minnesota and Penn State. Those are his first 2 double-digit scoring games of the season. So what does that tell you? Well, and today he took, what did he take?
9 shots
from the floor. Okay. It tells me that he has started really, really. He's not just in the process of figuring out. I think he started to definitively figure it out in terms of the balance that he has to play with. I love the way he attacked the basket today in transition and then even in the half court.
Yeah, he had that one great drive that just sliced him.
Are you talking about the one in the second half?
Yeah.
Yes, yes. That was the play that got – I mean, the transition stuff was great, but that play kind of got me out of my seat, so to speak. Like, wow. If that guy can start doing that with more consistency, this thing goes up another level because now defenses really have to deal with that. You know, we've seen Hogard did it in this game too. He's able to use his handle and his size to get to the rim and do some stuff at times. And that's a nice element to have, but available for the team. But that Tyson Walker play was a different animal. And it's something that I think is more sustainable, actually, because I think AJ, as I've said before, I think as you face bigger opponents, it gets harder to finish those plays. Not that he won't finish some, but it's just not, you know, that Kansas game was not the blueprint for how it's going to go because he's going to face bigger, better defensive opponents than he did in that game. It's just going to be harder for him to do what he did. Speed plays, though, against anybody.
Yeah.
And that's what you saw. And having – it wasn't even just the speed. It was the move. It was the vision and the instincts to, as you say, slice through that defense and find a way to the rim to finish. Really impressive game from him. I couldn't be happier with the way he played. And you know, and then AJ, look, 3 for 7 from the floor. 2 assists, 2 turnovers, not spectacular, but that's fine. You know, you'll take, so what did he have? 8 points, I think?
7.
7. Okay. That's right. No free throws. Yeah. So 7 points. That's a 7 points, 2 assists from your backup. But, you know, to go back to Tyson Walker. So he has now in the last 4 games, that brings him to, if my math is right, 28 assists, so 7 a game, going back to Louisville.
Uh-huh.
So coming out of the Bahamas. And I believe 8 turnovers.
Oh, yeah.
Because he had 4 in the last game, but he only had 3 combined in the Louisville and Toledo game and only 1 today. That's, listen, 28-8, almost a 4-1 ratio. That's, now we're getting, and he's scoring, mm-hmm. and he's defending. Now we're getting somewhere. Now we're not talking about just, well, okay, it's better than it was last year. Now we're talking about maybe this is starting to become a strength. Maybe this is starting to become the guy we hoped he could be as a catalyst for everything, not just a guy that, all right, we're not turning the ball over as much. We're getting a little bit of scoring. We're getting better defense, you know, which is where we were maybe prior and through the Bahamas. These last 4 games, it's been a different animal.
Uh-huh.
And if Michigan State gets this guy, look out. Look
yeah,
out.
And that's, those steals were, turnovers for touchdowns.
Well, they were. And what's great about Tyson Walker, and it was the one thing you had to worry about. He was his conference's defensive player of the year, but he led that conference in steals. And sometimes that gets confused for being a good defender.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it is. Sometimes you can be that and actually be a good defender. But sometimes it's actually an example of a guy who gambles a lot and really isn't sound consistently, you know. You just didn't know. What I had seen of Tyson Walker was limited. You know, it was highlight tapes, and then I think I had seen 1 complete game, his game against North Carolina. I didn't see terrible signs in that game, but you just don't know. What I think we've discovered is Tyson Walker is the best of all worlds. He is sound. He does not blow assignments. He stays within himself. He stays within the game plan defensively. He does what he's supposed to do, and yet he has quick enough hands and good enough instincts that he can still make disruptive plays,
mm-hmm.
which is not normally a part of the Michigan State equation. You know, they don't emphasize that. They emphasize the first part. But he's giving them some of the second while sticking and adhering to the first part.
Mm-hmm.
Stay sound, you know, execute your switches, fight through picks if that's what the game plan is. And don't blow assignments, don't make mistakes, don't get your head turned. He's doing all of those things while being disruptive. I could not be happier. I mean, other guys obviously scored more points today. I know Bingham's going to get a lot of attention, and rightly so, because he played a great game too. But to me, the Tyson Walker performance is the story of this game.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what it could portend for the future.
Yeah, yeah. Gabe, 15 points, 5 rebounds, and assist. Nice game for Gabe.
Yeah, he had a stretch in the second half where I thought he was hunting it a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and he missed some shots, and they weren't bad shots. Don't get me wrong. He rarely takes a bad shot. But they weren't great shots. And then he got himself calmed down again, hit that last 3. So, look, what can you say about Gabe? The 5 rebounds I like, that's a good number for him. I thought he played decently defensively. 5 for 12 overall is not Gabe-like necessarily, but 4 for 7 from 3, that is Gabe-like.
Yeah.
you like that, you know? That's a good, solid number.
And then Joey in 22 minutes, 7 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, a block. He looked like he was playing hard today.
I like, you know, that's another guy quietly. I really liked his game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the numbers aren't eye popping, right? 7 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists to 1 turnover. I like that. And I do believe that, not that I'm claiming anything for this, I think it was a fairly obvious thing to say at the time. And given that the Michigan State head coach is in the Basketball Hall of Fame, I would expect it. And we've seen it. And you remember back a few games, we talked about how probably the right move for him to get out of this funk he's been in is to just strip it down. Do a little less ball handling, just kind of just start to function within the system, you know, handle when you're asked to, don't look to create stuff and make plays. Don't bring the ball up very much. Just do your job, defend, rebound, take open shots when they're there, and see if that gets you back on track. And I think we're seeing that. This was a good game from him. Yeah. I like the stuff. He, you know, he was 0 for 2 on threes. They were good shots. They just didn't fall. But I liked the way he played inside the arc.
Mm-hmm.
He had some actually good, hard takes at the basket and finished. And that's something we haven't seen very much of yet this year. So that's really good news as well. And I also liked some of what he did defensively.
Yeah.
He had a possession, I recall. Now look, Lundy got loose a little bit in the second half and hit some threes. But especially in the first half, I liked some of what I saw from Joey. And it's also worth mentioning, especially the close to that first half, Michigan State went small ball again with Joey at the five and Malik at the four. And I thought they looked very good. They played very well. And I think what you conclude from this is that is another card that it appears that they have to play.
Mm-hmm.
It's showing enough to say, all right, this is something we can keep working on, keep looking to develop. There are going to be games where you're going to have an opportunity to use it where the opposition just isn't very big.
Yeah, but they did it when Harar went out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When they had Greg Lee in there, who we didn't even talk about because he hadn't played yet this year, transfer from Western Michigan, who did something and was okay. But, yeah, that's when they did it. This is what I'm interested in, though, and I mentioned this on the Spartan Mag board. I think I've talked about it here. I see potentially the way that that could really play out well for MSU, not as much in that scenario where you're just trying to match another team's small lineup, although you can use it there.
Mm.
And the reason I say that is I think Marcus Bynum can play against those kind of lineups, so I don't think it's any kind of necessity. So can Marble, actually, at least athletically. But where I want to maybe see if it's something that can be used is against teams with a ton of size. So a mismatch situation. So let's just say, for example, that Michigan State is playing Illinois and Marcus happens to get a couple of early fouls. Might it be an option to go to that look to force Illinois to have to match Michigan State? Now, it only works if a couple things happen. One, if Joey can defend and rebound well enough to not just get destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
That's an open question. We haven't seen it this year, so we don't know. But the other element is he's also got to be hitting enough that he's forcing the defense to extend more than they can or just punishing them when they can't. You know, Kofi Coburn does not want to be chasing guys at the arc.
No.
Neither does Dickinson, neither do Purdue's guys. I'm not saying they can't ever do it, but that's not their preference. So as a counter, I'm not saying a steady diet of it, but as a counter, as something that you might be able to use in a given situation, it's something I've at least got in the back of my mind, and the better that group plays together, the more likely I think that we might see it as a card to play at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, don't get me wrong. I'm not talking 20 minutes of it, but I'm talking if you have a particular situation where fouls or whatever are putting you in a spot where maybe you can't match up the way you ideally would, which is have Marcus playing there against those guys, maybe it's a counter that's available to you. We have to wait and see, but I liked Joey's game today. To me, that's too straight where it's not blowing the doors off anybody, but he's playing effectively. He's playing the way they need him to play.
Yeah. And then Max, only 7 points, 2 rebounds, 1 for 5 from three, but did play some good defense.
He did, and he always does. And so, you know, you're happy about that. I thought today was the first time, and it was in that first half, that Max didn't take horrible shots, but I thought he took a couple that just weren't great shots.
Mm-hmm.
That were a little bit him, okay, he's trying to get himself going, but they weren't examples of great shot selection. And here's the thing. In this offense, with the way they're playing, if you're patient, you're probably going to get great shots, not just good ones, not just okay ones.
Mm-hmm.
So I was that to me was a little bit of a sign that maybe it's starting to get to him a little bit. But hey, the bottom line is he's doing the other things well. And, you know, the shots, I know we keep saying it, and probably there are people starting to get skeptical about it, but the shot is going to come.
Mm-hmm.
It will.
Yeah, I mean, but you look at, I guess you'd have to give credit to the wings in general on defense. I mean, Dredd, 28 minutes, 0 points, 0 rebounds. Cornwall, 0 points, 0 rebounds in 21 minutes. I mean,
Pickett. Yeah, Sessoms was really the only guy.
Yeah.
It was Sessoms and Pickett, but even Pickett was 6 or 15.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, I mean, he scored, but it's not like he got, you know, it's not like he really got loose.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the damage that they did, and I think we talked about this in the preview, you know, when you look at Penn State, their 4 and 5 positions are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lundy ended up, what did he end up? So 14,
18 and 7.
18 points, 18 and 7. That's not bad. And Harar was 16 and 11.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really good production. You know, they've got, and with Lee coming in, not that he's a star, but he at least gives them something off the bench there. They could feel okay about their post.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's their perimeter group that is not up to snuff, you know, and Michigan State, you're right. Defensively, pretty good job. I was happy with the way that Michigan State defended in this game. I mean, when you look at it, what did Penn State shoot? So they shot a little better than I thought. They're 43% better than I would have thought, and that you want to give up. But I think the thing to keep in mind there is what I mentioned earlier. I thought they hit a lot of, frankly, ridiculous shots.
Yeah.
I mean,
there must have been four fadeaways that they hit.
Yes. I think Michigan State's defense was better than that suggests. Now, I do want to give them credit. Some of those guys, you know, Sessoms, mostly Sessoms, you could see why he's a good scorer. Mm. And you know, he's a veteran. He knows how to use his body to create enough space. He gets an angle on somebody. He usually makes you pay for it. He had a couple of plays. You mentioned the fadeaways, but there were a couple that were actually, I think, good shots because he got 2 feet in the lane and then used his body to give himself enough space so the shot was actually a good shot, kind of an 8-10 foot jumper. And he hit some of those. And Harrer is, you know, exactly what we build him to be, right? He's a guy who's going to play within himself, not force anything, use his body, his strength to create space. He's kind of gotten a little more clever around the rim, too. I thought there were some nice finishes today from him. So those things are going to happen. But I still think Michigan State overall played a pretty good defensive game.
Malik Hall, 9 points, 6 rebounds, an assist, hit 3 for 5 from the floor, hit a 3, 2 for 2 from the line, 2 turnovers though.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't have much to complain about.
Yeah.
With Malik Hall. I mean, he was in the first half. I don't know what maybe he only had the 3. Maybe not even then. I don't know if he scored in the first half, actually. But in the second half, he was a more aggressive player offensively, which was good to see.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think we're seeing the maturation of Malik Hall into a guy that, and I said this in the Minnesota game, when he's on the court and the ball's in his hands, I just feel comfortable.
Yeah.
I feel like good decisions are going to get made. You know, the right things are going to happen more often than not. And he's got enough skill and enough talent and enough physical tools to make things happen sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm happy with his game. Wasn't a huge scoring game, but if I'm going to complain about 9 and 6, shoot me.
And then Jaden Akins, 5 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, a block, a steal. He got that steal dunk. Another nice game from him.
He just continues to do things that I want to. The reason I'm pausing is I want to make sure I express this point coherently. I knew full well what kind of potential he had. And not just physical. I mean, the physical tools are obvious. Everybody knows that. But I had seen him progress in terms of his shooting ability, his ball handling as his high school time went on. Mm-hmm. What has been, and I knew he had the potential to be a very good defender. What has been striking to me, though, is, and this isn't to say he's a perfect player, that he never makes a mistake, but with freshmen, you just kind of expect, hey, there's going to be a learning curve. There are going to be some errors you got to play through. You know, they figure it out. I just don't feel that way with him. You know, again, not that he plays mistake-free basketball. And same thing for Max. Those guys just, they look the part. And that's the thing. With Max, I expected it because of the billing. And that's what people had said about him. And sure enough, he plays that way. Shots be damned. He plays that way. Jaden Akins, I wasn't sure if it would be this smooth and this quick, but it has been.
Yeah.
And he's arrived. I mean, it, not that this is the ceiling. He's going to be much, much better even than what we're seeing. But he's a guy, absolutely, you look at and say, hey, he's part of the game plan. We count on him to actually do things, not just exist.
21 minutes. That may be a high for him.
And why not?
Yeah.
Because of the energy he plays with, the way he rebounds, he kind of, he attacks the game where it's appropriate. I don't think he shows signs of getting out of control.
No.
He doesn't force much. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. When you talk about where can this team get to, can Jaden Akins continue to grow and just become a little more impactful? You know, I'm not talking, obviously he's playing well right now, but you know what I mean? Maybe be a guy who's able to get a few more shots, a guy who's able to make just a few more plays for you offensively. What does that do to your ceiling?
Yeah. Cause it's not like he's finding a way to get points, and it's not like they're running a whole lot of sets for him. It's not like his numbers getting called and like, okay,
he's finding spots.
Yeah. He's finding his own offense.
There are gonna be times where the ball gets swung to him and he's open. The today, I think the shot that he hit was not so much a result of that. It was actually just him being ready and kind of making a play. And then obviously you mentioned earlier the steal and the dunk. That was, again, just finding those spots.
Mm-hmm. And then Sissoko got in for 6 minutes, had 4 points, 2 for 2, a block.
We've said this about him before. I think that occasionally I will see fans lament, and they did this with Bynum, and they're doing it with Sissoko, and it's usually one of or both of these two things. One of them is, how is this guy rated so highly? And the second bit, because they're both, Marcus was, I think, a top 60 guy. I think Mahdi was a top 50. Mm. And then the second part is, they were clearly a recruiting mistake. The first part, you have to understand, big guys who actually have it all together are guys that are in the top 20. Anything beyond that, it's a crapshoot.
Yeah.
Because big men, it is notoriously the case that you don't know for sure when the light's going to come on. And we've seen anybody who questioned this should be looking at Marcus Bynum's career arc now and seeing it. But you go back over time. Adrian Payne, his freshman year was a mess. His sophomore year, he was at least competent, but not a great player. And then his junior and senior year was fantastic. Goran Suton took until his junior year, which is actually his fourth year in the program, to become consistently impactful and was great as a senior.
Yeah.
I mean, I can go back over time, and there's so many examples of this. Yeah, absolutely. The rarities are the guys who get it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think that Mati Sissoko that you see right now is the Mati Sissoko you'll see next year or the year after that, I'm going to suggest to you you're probably wrong. He especially, because he's got less experience playing the game, he got hurt more than anybody by the COVID year last year, the offseason. It is going to be a different ball game.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the second part, right? Which is the development curve with big men is different. You know, if you have a guard who comes out and just is not good at all, even that can change sometimes. I remember Xavier Simpson was an abject disaster for Michigan as a freshman. He barely played because of it, and he ended up becoming a very good player for them.
Mm.
You know, we may be seeing some version of that with A.J. Hogarth at Michigan State, but normally it's easier to see perimeter guys early. Like, they'll usually show you that they have it, at least more flashes. Big men, you just don't know. All that said, I think the reasons that you stay optimistic about Mati Sissoko is what we saw today. Two post moves against, and Herrer is not a shot blocker. He's not the best defensive player in the league, but he's strong and he's a fifth-year guy. And both of those buckets came over him, and they were both really nice moves and finishes.
Mm-hmm.
Just stayed strong, got position, went up, shot release, bang. I think there's a future for Mati Sissoko. Don't know exactly where it's going to go, to what level, but I am still absolutely in the camp that believes he will be a productive player for Michigan State, far beyond what you're seeing today, at some point.
And I think maybe some of the reason that people are looking at Sissoko like, you know, what's going on here is partially due to how good Marcus Bingham is.
This year, maybe.
Yeah, in the, like, contract, the pick and roll, like, especially in, yes, like the pick and roll on both offense and defense, his timing, yes, has just gotten so much better that when you, yep, see Sissoko out there, who has a lot of the same skill sets that Bingham, yep, has, it's just the timing's off. It's just not, correct, quite as good as Bingham. You know, it's kind of a lot of the way I used to think about Kenny Goings, is that when he's in there, you just, everything's running smoothly and going well. It's when he's, right, out there, not in there, that you realize how big of an impact he is.
I couldn't agree more. It's a great point. And I think you're right as to why, but it also ought to be the evidence that tells you,
exactly,
okay, wait a minute. Took Marcus Bingham, I would say, 2 2/3 years. Because I'm going to give him credit for the way he ended last season.
Mm-hmm.
It took him 2 2/3 years to really start to figure it out. And obviously, he's gone up considerably even since the end of last year.
Mm-hmm.
The end of last season, I thought he became productive because he was affecting games with his defense. He was rebounding better. And he could give you a little bit of scoring on, you know, transition or garbage buckets or whatever. Now we're seeing he's gone up a level from that. He's better than that offensively. He's a total game changer defensively, and he's never rebounded this well in his life. So it took him that long. And he had – Marcus wasn't the most experienced guy in the world either, but he had more than Mati did,
mm-hmm,
coming into college. So – you know, Mati Sissoko isn't even halfway through his second year.
Yeah.
There's lots of time. And I'm going to say it again. We're coming up on this. I'm sure we'll return to it at the end. We're coming up on this period. Two games in, what is it, 18, 19 days? Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
This is the time. It is the time for Mati Sissoko and Pierre Brooks to kind of make their move. And they've both shown flashes. They've both had stints. Today it was Mati, where you say, okay, I could see what this could be.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the time to make that happen, this period, right now.
And then Marble, only 7 minutes in this one, 4 points, did have a nice low post move.
He had the one bucket down. I liked. That was good to see. He got in foul trouble in the first half, and so he didn't play, and then at a short stint. And then the second half, I think between the way Marcus was playing and the way Mati played, you know, there just weren't more minutes for him. But it was a little – not that he had a huge opportunity here, but it was a little bit of a bounce back from what I thought was probably his worst game of the season at Minnesota. Mm. The fact that he hit that play in the post, that was nice. You know, kind of a jump hook from – I don't know, 8 feet, 10 feet. It wasn't a layup. It wasn't a dunk. That was nice. So,
and it came at a point when, like similar to the Minnesota game, where they were up by 19 and then got a little jump shot happy, and it looked like they sort of settled down a little bit, got the ball down to Marble. I mean, that, and then he made that play. That's a good weapon to have, you know, when you want to get it inside and not get jumper happy. He can get things done with you there. Yeah.
Couldn't agree more. I think it's you're right. It settled things a little bit, and it's exactly how they need. It's the kind of play that you need from Julius, you know. And it was disappointing that we didn't see it against Minnesota. That, you know, when things, as you say, are getting a little jumper happy, you want to slow it down, get a good look. That's a guy you can go to.
Yeah,
and you know, and look, we're not going to get this kind of play every time out yet, I don't think, out of Mati. You know, so you need – I said it coming into the season. I was pretty confident with Bainham. He's been better even than I expected. But I was confident they were going to get good play out of him. What I didn't know was, what about those backup minutes? And my feeling was, coming into the year, ideally, Mati needed to – quicken the development pace, because I just didn't have a lot of confidence in Marble as a defender or rebounder. Well, Julius has been better than I expected too, which has bought them a little more time with Mati.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, that's about it for the players. I think that covers everyone. The first key was pace. What was 31-3 fast break? They said on the broadcast.
I rail on this podcast about the haphazard quote unquote accuracy of fast break points. But in this game, that number is absolutely reflective of what we saw.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan State from the get go. We talked about it in the preview that, you know, Micah Shrewsbury understands full well what Michigan State is about. He coached in this league long enough as an assistant. And, yeah, they have some guys who have been around, but they've also got some new guys, and then they're playing with so little depth. And you saw this at times. There was one play, Brian Butch, who I thought was better today than he was in Minneapolis. He called out a play, I think, correctly. There was a segment, one Walker getting a transition layup, where he just was kind of going not at full tilt, but then saw something and kicked into high gear and just went right past everybody to the bucket for an uncontested layup.
Mm-hmm.
The problem there was Harrer was exhausted. And I thought Harrer really, he was still in a good game, but man, it takes its toll on him playing in a game like this.
Yeah.
Because Michigan State just ran him. He had to keep up with those guys rim running, and it took its toll. And that was a play where it took its toll, because he was just kind of half jogging and was at the top of the key. Tyson just went past him. The big man's got to get back. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the first priority in transition defense. Your guy who's going to be in the middle at the rim has got to get back, and he just couldn't get back. Michigan State, I thought their transition game was efficient, consistent, and aggressive, and that's all you can ask for.
Yeah.
And I thought, we talked about it, you know, the Minnesota game, They didn't have the point totals reflected in it necessarily, but I thought it was pretty good against that team too. That team just did a much better job, for whatever reason, of getting back and not giving Michigan State that many wide open layups and dunks as they had today.
Yeah. And then threes. Michigan State was 43%, 9 for 21, which, Rod, that brings their season total now up to 38.5%. Which is 34th in the country.
Hey, I will say this. I thought that
they didn't shoot as many as I thought they might need to in this game. So what was the total was 21 attempts. Yep. Well, that's not horrible. But again, we say this, Max Christie and Joey Hauser are not dialed in yet. Mm-hmm. Now you can say, okay, they got some breaks. Hogarth hit one. You don't necessarily expect that, but I look at it, and I always try to look at it this way. I know this is hard sometimes for fans to do. The results are great, and of course, that's ultimately what counts in the end. At the end of a season, you are what your statistics tell you you are. Mm-hmm. But that's not how I believe you have to evaluate it as you're going. What you're primarily interested in is, at least if you believe that you've got guys that are capable of hitting shots, which they do. They believe that, and in fact, they do. Mm-hmm. You're looking for quality of shot. How many good shots are you getting? And the fact remains, all along this season, Michigan State has gotten good looks. Mm-hmm. Early, they weren't hitting as much the first four games. We're now on a 7-game roll where over 14 halves, they've had one bad half shooting. It was the third game in 3 days against a very good opponent. So I dismiss that one. The fact is, they're on a 7-game roll here where they've taken their 3-point shooting to the point that it's clearly a weapon.
Yeah.
Right. So they maybe didn't get quite as many looks as I thought Penn State might, in part because MSU was in transition so much.
Yeah.
But good stuff. I mean, they cashed in, you know, and even with Penn State heating up late in the game, MSU still made 4 more threes and only had 1 more attempt. So big difference.
Yeah. And then control the lane.
Yeah. I thought that MSU was okay there. I give Penn State credit. Harrah was good, as I mentioned. I thought at times their guards did I like some of what Penn State ran. That's the thing. If I feel, for different reasons, I feel kind of the same way I did about Ben Johnson watching Micah Shrewsbury's first game against Michigan State. They ran some good stuff, and they made use of the strengths that they had, which primarily is that's not a particularly athletic team, mm-hmm. and it's not a hugely skilled team, but they got guys that are mature, kind of some strong bodies, even if they're not particularly tall. And I thought their guys used their bodies well, and I thought their action was good at times, at least, to generate decent shots. And their guards were part of that. I mentioned Sessoms get 2 feet in the lane, you know, and making use of that. Pickett did that at times too. So, but I think you look at what Michigan State did in this game. 30 defensive rebounds. They only gave up 6 offensive rebounds to Penn State. That's really good. 7 blocks for Michigan State. Mm-hmm. Penn State's 2-point shooting would have been 22 for 43, so not great there. It was just over 50%. That would be the one thing. They maybe didn't do quite as good a job defending inside the arc as you would have liked, but decent enough. Mm. You know, 50%, which is essentially what they shot, they're one shot better than that, yeah. is not a disaster on twos. It's you want to be under 50%. That's your goal, but it wasn't like Penn State made great hay. So they were Michigan State was okay there.
And then rebounding was the other key. 40 to 28 total rebounds, it looks like, to Michigan State's advantage.
Yeah, of course the number that we try to look at is rebounding rate. And Michigan State in this one had a pretty good rebounding rate. Yeah, almost 36% on the offensive boards. Meanwhile, what was that? So 36. Penn State did nothing on its offensive glass, 17%, just under offensive rebounding rate. So excellent job by Michigan State on the defensive boards, which we kind of figured would be the case. And Michigan State did a pretty good job on its offensive glass. You know, 36% is nothing to sneeze at. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And then turnovers. Look, I have 11 to 7.
Yeah, and there were 4 in the first 5 minutes, I think. So for the last 35 minutes of this game, 7 turnovers, you can live with that. And it was a fast-paced game. It's not like this was a slow walk it up. God, you know, Michigan State was able to make it fast. And so you're reasonably happy with that. There were some weird – just it's the stuff that I know gets people upset because they focus in on the stuff that you look at and think, I don't understand how that could happen. There was one where Hogard was driving – and the ball just flew out of his hands. And I mean flew. It went like into the arc, second row. Like 15 feet. And what? Where did that come from? Mm-hmm. You know, there's those moments where you just can't grasp how. But look, 11 turnovers, that's not terrible. And so we're now talking about two Big Ten games. And granted, not against high-pressure defenses. You know, not against the best defenses they're going to see. But two games in Big Ten play, they're averaging 12 turnovers. Mm. If they kept that up all year, you can absolutely live with that.
Yeah.
They're not going to, by the way, but you could live with that.
But at least it seems now that the really egregious stuff has kind of gone away. The stepping on the sidelines, the inbound passes that are just weak. And, you know.
Yeah, that's a good – I'm glad you mentioned that because you know where I thought Michigan State was a lot better today, kind of across the board? Was post feeds.
Yeah.
Not that they did it a ton, but they did it more frequently than we've seen lately, and they were much, much more efficient with it.
Yep. Okay. Well, any final thoughts on that one, Rod? It was a good win.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you took care of business, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're playing two Big Ten games that you look at the schedule, you look at where teams are projected, what you expect from them, and you think, well, these are two you got to have. On the road against a Minnesota team in a total rebuild, at home against a Penn State team also in a rebuild, maybe not quite as drastic. And you say, these are games we ought to win.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. And they won them, you know, both game. In this game, they actually had a 21-point lead at the peak. Minnesota, it was 19. And that one, I think maybe the little bit of improvement is that one, you kind of let Minnesota hang around.
Mm-hmm.
This game, Penn State, I think the closest they got in the second half was 12 points.
Yeah.
So you never let it get into single digits. That's a solid, solid effort, what you want to see, you know. Because I think that for Penn State, I didn't hear Micah Shrewsbury's post game, but other than the transition defense, I would look at the way they played and not be entirely dissatisfied. I mean, they are a turnover-prone team, too. What do they have, 7?
Yeah.
They didn't kick the ball around much. Now, the ones they did commit seemed to be impactful. Michigan State had some pick sixes in there. But overall, they handled it pretty well. They shot it well inside the arc. They did a lot of damage there. They weren't able to hit threes, but, you know, that's going to happen sometimes. They got pounded on the glass, but that's going to happen for them, unfortunately, because of their size and their lack of depth. I don't think I feel like this was a terrible performance if I'm Micah Shrewsbury. I don't know. Maybe he feels differently. But and that's I say that because that is, to me, illustrative of how you should feel about it as a Michigan State fan. It's not like Penn State came out here and was just abysmal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They weren't. They did some things, and they've got some guys that can make plays. And you handled them. And you handled them in, I think, the line that I saw Dave Revson use right after the game, just before we started recording, was workmanlike. And that's kind of what it was. This Michigan State just kind of stayed steady. And, yeah, there were ebbs and flows, but they stayed steady with it and just kept building it. It's not like they had one huge push that blew the game open. They just kind of kept building it and stayed steady. Never let themselves get out of kilter too much. And you look up and you got a 16-point win and you're 2-0 in the league and you're going into a big break where you can work on yourself now for a while. Good stuff.
Yep. And you got to
think, this is a good team.
The morale's got to be really high because everyone's chipping in. There's no one on this team
playing that
you feel like, well, they're just not playing at all.
I think the only guy maybe that I could see maybe having some what about me in this might be Pierre Brooks, but you know, again, he's this is it for him right now for this season. This is his chance. And so it's on him and what he can do in practice and developing individually to kind of work his way into it. Because I still believe at some point they're going to want to have that card to play. They're going to want to have that extra body on the wing. And he can be that guy.
Yeah,
I think he has the potential to do it. But, yeah, you got – you know, I just said it a second ago. I'll say it point blank. This is a good basketball team.
Yeah.
I don't know where the ceiling is. I don't know where it ends up. We know if you follow Michigan State and you try to make that call in the middle of December, that's a fool's errand because a lot happens between now and March. It always does. Even last year it did. But I look at this team and I think, what reason is there to believe that they can't be a team that can push to finish at the top of the standings? I'm not prepared yet to say they could win the league, but I will say after the first round of games in the conference that I've seen, I'm at least allowing myself a glimmer of hope that perhaps Purdue is not the colossus that I thought that they were. And that's not even just because they lost. It's also their win against Iowa was not dominant by any means.
Yeah.
So, you know, is that a possibility? I don't know. But I do think this team absolutely can say, hey, we can be in the mix at the top of this conference for sure. That's a totally legitimate goal, regardless of what you think about Purdue. Because anybody else in this conference, come on. Michigan State can play with anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that I'm convinced of. So then, you know, you start thinking about, well, what does that mean for March? And who the hell knows? Because so much goes into that, but, you know, including luck. But I feel great about where they're sitting. And I think a lot of that is because of Tyson Walker's play in the last two games.
Yeah.
It shows you what that dimension can do for this team. It's so important.
Yep.
And I think he really is starting. We are seeing the signs that this guy, and it's not one game, it's four games now, and particularly the last two where he's looking to score, where you are seeing what Tyson Walker can be, what he can bring to this team in all facets of the game, and that's huge.
Okay. Well, we'll end it there and then get a preview up for Oakland here in the next little while here. Until then, the Final Four is not on the schedule.